continue our conversation on the NBA Finals, the Warriors completing the sweep. Chris Fedor of Cleveland.com is with us. Chris, how you doing, man?
Good morning, Bull. I'm doing okay. How are you?
Doing great. You know, before we get into LeBron and the Cavs angle, I was just talking about how you look at the Warriors, since they got Durant, seven of their eight playoff series have been won in five games or less. Only the Rockets series this year went more than five games. That's remarkable.
It is, and it's interesting that you bring that up because I remember throughout the course of this current playoff run for the Warriors, Steph Curry kept mentioning like doing things and adding to the story that they hadn't written yet. And he said being down 3-2 against the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, you know, that's not something that we felt as a group yet. We have a chance to add to our story. And I got the sense going into last night's game that they wanted to add a sweep in the NBA Finals to their story. Like sometimes the Warriors come out sluggish in the first quarter. They had a different kind of look. I think they smelled blood and they went for it. So yep. It was a dominant performance by the Warriors. All credit to them. They were clearly the better team in this series.
No doubt. And the Cavs, I think at times played a lot better than I expected. Clearly they could have won game one. They were right in game three. Even game two, they were hanging in there till early in the fourth quarter. Last night they played a decent first half, you know, okay, but second half a disaster. Did you think they quit in the third quarter? Did they give up?
I don't think they gave up. I know a lot of people are going to go to that, and that's fine. And there might be a natural human reaction to just recognize what you're up against and not give it 100%. But I think the reality is what it takes to beat the Warriors is 48 minutes of great basketball, right? And in game one, it took 53 minutes of great basketball. But usually 48 minutes of great basketball. That's just to win one game, Bull. Then you have to do that four times in seven tries. That's what the Cavs were up against. And I think the Cavs are able, because of the talent that they have, because of the game plan that they had going into a game, because of a variety of factors, the Cavs are able to hang for a half or maybe three quarters or maybe 47 minutes and 30 seconds. But it has to be 48 minutes. And I think what you saw last night is the Cavs, you know, they played okay, I think, in the first half. They did some positive things in the first half, but that's not enough against this team. And one minor slip-up, and suddenly it turns into an avalanche. And the Cavs came out sluggish in the third quarter again. That's been, as Kevin Love said after the game, their Achilles heel. It's been their bad habit. And the Warriors go on a 6-0 run, and it changes the game that quick. So I don't think they gave up. I just don't think they ever had enough to push back against the Warriors in last night's game when the Warriors brought their A game.
You know, it's funny, Chris. I heard Rodney Hood before the game yesterday say, well, in game three, that the Warriors needed 43 from Kevin Durant to beat us. Like he said it almost like they'd accomplished something by – you know, oh, Durant needed 43. But here's the difference. Durant needed 43 in that game for them to win, sure, because the other guys did not play well. But the Cavs need LeBron to score 43 or more in every game to have just a chance.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think Rodney Hood was a little bit delusional in saying some of those things that he was saying. And you're right. I think what game one kind of showed and what a few games in the series showed is the level that LeBron had to get to just to give the Cavs a chance. And if you spin it forward into his future and his decision coming up, I think that's going to be something that hangs over this entire decision, is I had to do all of this and it still wasn't close to good enough.
Right.
And that was shown, I think, in game one was the first time that it was shown. I mean, LeBron had 51-8-8. The Warriors were coming off a tough seven-game series against the Houston Rockets, and it seemed like they had a bit of an emotional hangover. And like so many things in that particular game had to go right for the Cavs, and they did, and yet they didn't leave with a win. And I think this time of year in the NBA Finals, you don't get games back. When you have the opportunity to take them, like game one and three, you better be good enough to take them because you're not going to get a shot to do it again. And the Cavs weren't able to do that, and the Warriors were.
Yeah, if you can't win a game when LeBron scores 51 and you can't win a game where Klay and Curry go 7 for 27 and right. 3 for 15 from 3, then you just can't win a game. It's that simple.
Exactly right. Yeah. The Cavs did some really good things at times throughout the course of this series.
Sure.
And it just didn't matter. Kevin Durant made it not matter. You know, the Warriors' talent level made it not matter. The Warriors' championship experience made it not matter. And that's what it comes down to. I wrote after game one, Bold, that I had a sense of this could go the same way that it went with the Toronto Raptors. And I even wrote it at the time. I said, the Cavs aren't the Raptors. They've got championship experience, but they're also human. And the way that game one went, like, that's something that can have a carryover for the rest of the series.
Right.
And in talking to some of the guys after the game last night, they admitted it. They admitted that game one was really, really difficult for them to get over. And I got the sense after game one that the Cavs were going to be talking about game one this year the way that they talked about game three last year. But again, it comes down to, against the Warriors, you cannot give games away. You have to take advantage of the ones where they're not at their best, and you do a lot of things right.
We're talking with Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com. All right, Chris, I know LeBron was asked yesterday about his future. He said he hadn't made a decision yet. So, you know, I'll take him at his word on that. I mean, obviously he's thought about it, but did you think he was being honest that he has not made the decision yet?
I don't think he has made the decision yet.
Right.
I don't think he could, because I think a lot of things are going to change over the next week, 2-3 weeks in the NBA, because that's just the way it goes, Bull. And I think what's going to be interesting, and I think what is the toughest thing to figure out, and he didn't reveal this following the game last night, this was year 15. He's 33 years old. He's played over 54,000 minutes, combining the regular season and postseason. At times throughout the course of this year, I felt like he had a look of content on his face, that he was at peace with whatever outcome happened this year. He believes that his legacy is secure. He can add to his legacy, but he doesn't feel like it can go the other way. So he believes his legacy is secure, and I think the hard thing to figure out now is, because of this stage that he's at in his career and because of what his family means and because of the attention that he puts on that, I think it's hard to know what's going to drive this decision, because the first two decisions, I think you had a great idea of what was going to drive it. This one, I think, is harder to pinpoint.
Yeah. I think it's a good point. He did talk about family and how important that was, and obviously being from Cleveland, that factors in. That's the only reason the Cavs have a chance to keep him, because obviously if you take LeBron off the Cavs and compare the talent to the rest of this roster, there are 20 teams better. Is that fair?
At least 15? Fair. I mean, come on. In the NBA Finals against the Warriors, the Cavs had two players averaging double figures for the entire series. Like, their third most important player made a shot, one, and it came in game one. That's Kyle Korver. He scored 6 total points.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that the Cavs gave up a first-round pick and Isaiah Thomas and Channing Frye for Jordan Clarkson got plastered to the bench in the final two games of the series because he was too reckless in the first two games. You know, Rodney Hood was plastered to the bench in the first two games. He was supposed to help the Cavs in this particular series against the Warriors. He was supposed to give them new life at the trade deadline. So, boy, you can just go down the line on and on. And that kind of highlights what LeBron dragged into the NBA Finals. So, yeah, I think what you say makes a lot of sense. And I think the thing that LeBron's going to look at this offseason, he said he's still in championship mode. So that's a bad thing for the Cavs if he's still in championship mode and if being in Cleveland and this being home is not enough for him. And it doesn't seem like it is. Here's the reality. In the last two NBA finals, LeBron has averaged 34-9-11, and the Cavs are 1-8.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's remarkable.
So he knows that his best, his highest level, isn't close to good enough with this particular supporting cast.
Yeah. You look at the fits out there, and obviously, you know, Miami wasn't an obvious fit before we knew what they were going to do and bring in Chris Bosh as well. So who knows? You know, the Lakers have been brought up a lot. In theory, if the Lakers got LeBron and Paul George added to their current team, I still don't think they're as good as Golden State or Houston. Do you? I mean, is there anything else the Lakers could do? Could they, you know, I mean, Houston seems to make some sense. Anything else, he'd have to figure it out, right? I mean, Philadelphia, you know, what do you do? Ben Simmons is a ball handler. You know, could he go to Boston? Is that, could this be some long con with Kyrie Irving? I don't know. What do you make of it?
I love the conspiracy.
Right? I got to throw it out. I mean, I don't believe it, but, you know, I mean, anything, I don't know. I'm fascinated to see what's going to happen here.
Oh, man, I forget who it was. I think it might have been the NBA Twitter account, or maybe it was Bleacher Report. They did a fun little thing about, like, texts that LeBron was probably getting at his locker last night from players around the NBA, like Chris Paul with a bunch of emojis with a banana boat or something like that. And then the one from Kyrie was, don't even think about it. So, I mean, I love the conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
But this is my view as it stands right now, Bull. I think there are four legitimate contenders for LeBron right now. I think it's the Cavs because of what we mentioned. I don't think they're the front runner. I think they're probably last in this order. So if I'm going in order, I think it's Lakers, 76ers, Rockets, but I think that one would be hard, and Cavs. And I know you brought up the Lakers, and I think the Lakers are kind of the best of both worlds, right? Like in 2010, Miami had a whole bunch of salary cap, and they were able to use it to form a big three. And the thing that we have known from the last two decisions is not about what the team is, right? It's about what the team can become.
Right.
He left a team in Miami that went to four straight NBA finals because he felt like the Cavs could become something greater than the Heat. And, of course, there was the other Cleveland stuff and unfinished business and whatnot. But from a basketball standpoint, he left because he felt like the Cavs could become something greater than the Heat. You know, in 2010, he left the Cavs the first time because he felt like the Heat, even though they won only 47 games that previous year, and they, I think, were the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference, and the Cavs obviously were, you know, a team that could compete for a championship. It's because of what he felt the Heat could become with Bosh and Wade, and then don't forget Mike Miller thrown in there as well.
Yeah.
So the Lakers are kind of the best of both worlds, I think. They have the cap space, no doubt, to lure two free agents, but they also have the young, talented pieces that could become a trade package to get another star or borderline star to L.A., the way that the Cavs used Andrew Wiggins and Anthony Bennett, two first overall picks, in order to get Kevin Love to team him with LeBron and Kyrie. So if LeBron goes to L.A., say, for example, with Paul George, they could use, you know, guys like Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, future assets, to form something even greater than that moving forward. So I think the Lakers, because of that, I think they have the ability to become something great to challenge the Warriors into the future. And I think that would appeal to LeBron.
It's going to be a fascinating next 5 weeks, Chris. Can't wait to see, you know, selfishly, I hope he stays in Cleveland because it's a lot more fun covering the Cavs when he's there. But, well, we'll see. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for joining me this morning.
You got it. I hope it's just before July 17th. And I actually joked around with LeBron about this because I've got a vacation planned. So it just has to be before July 17th.
I know.
From my
I'm going on vacation also. That's a Tuesday, right? Isn't it?
Yes.
I'm going on the 6th. I'm off starting the 16th, so it'll probably be the week before that, won't it? Probably.
I was going through his past. I think it was, July 8th?
Yeah.
I think there was a July 11th one.
There you go. I think
never
we're good.
Gone beyond that. I think we're okay, Paul.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Chris.
You got it.